Lord bless you. Have some visitors with us, and we're thankful for your presence in our midst. We hope that you'll have the opportunity to be here with us for the Bible Forum over the next 3 days. Greg is going to be talking to us about questions surrounding a good God in an evil world, and I think that will be profitable. I hope this morning's lesson is going to kind of feed into that. A month ago, we looked a little bit at the first part of Ecclesiastes, and I want to continue in that vein this morning. Solomon deals with the problem of living in a world that is broken and bent by sin. And it not only recognizes the problem that we'll be talking about over the next few days, but it conveys wisdom about how to deal with it. And the kind of wisdom that we get from the writer of Ecclesiastes is necessary if we are to navigate a complex and broken world. It is a wisdom that will be necessary if we are to put things in their proper perspective. It is a wisdom that will be necessary if we are to find joy in a broken world. And it is a wisdom that will be necessary if we are to hold on to faith in a broken world. And so we're not going to go deeply into the book of Ecclesiastes. We're going to kind of be hitting some high points, more of an overview than anything else. And so we've gone through it in a little bit more detail in the past in classes and in other venues. And so I'm not going to try and do that this morning, but we're going to hit some high points in the first three chapters. I want to begin where we left off in chapter 1 and verse 12. He says, I, the preacher, have been king over Israel and Jerusalem, and I set my mind to seek and explore by wisdom concerning all that has been done under heaven. It is a grievous task which God has given to the sons of men to be afflicted with. I've seen all the works which have been done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and striving after wind. What is crooked cannot be straightened, and what is lacking cannot be counted. And so he looks at life and he says, it's just hard down here. And it's hard because we look around and we see so much that is wrong with the world. There is injustice. There is pain. There is suffering. There's hardship. There's evil. We look around and we see all that. And people have been seeing it for a long, long time. Diagnosing the problem is not the issue. The problem is no one's had any success doing anything about it. The world is broken in innumerable ways, and we can't fix it. And what Solomon immediately contemplates here is bringing to bear wisdom on the situation. He says, I said to myself, behold, I have magnified and increased wisdom more than all who were over Jerusalem before me. And my mind has observed a wealth of wisdom and knowledge. And I set my mind to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. And I realized that this also is striving after the wind, because in much wisdom there is much grief, and increasing knowledge results in increasing pain. And so Solomon brought to bear the considerable weight of his God-given wisdom to this problem. And far from being an answer, wisdom just made things worse. And we might say, well, how? Why? I mean, it would seem like in all that wisdom there would be some answers. And of course there are. some answers. It wisdom allows us to see how bad things are. And it also allows us to see how good things could be. But the problem is, and there are many problems, but one of the problems is not everyone has wisdom. And worse yet, not everyone wants wisdom. And so even in situations where wisdom could be brought to bear and make things so much better than they are, sometimes people just don't want to hear it. And they persist in behavior that is ultimately destructive in spite of being confronted with wisdom, and problems persist and things go on. And so Solomon, recognizing all that and more, looks at wisdom and he says, you know what? You know what wisdom did for me? It helped me to see how messed up things really are. I now have a much better view of the horror and chaos that is this world. Thank you so much, wisdom. He couldn't fix it. All his might, all his wealth, all his God-given wisdom, and he still couldn't fix everything that was broken in the world. He just came to know how broken things really were. Now, this section is unique among the sections that we're going to look at this morning, because in all of the other sections, there is a response that Solomon is going to say, okay, here's how you respond to this. And usually his response contains something good and positive and even enjoyable. So there's going to be some joy coming later on, which is why we read the passage we did earlier. There is no response here, but I think there's an implied response. And the implied response to this is, the world's broken. We can't fix it. We need to be humble. Because people have been trying to fix it for a long, long time. And going through life, assuming that you have all the answers, is going to be a painful process. You don't. None of us does. And we should be humbled, profoundly humbled, by the fact that not only can the crooked not be straightened, it can't even be numbered. We're never even going to get our arms around the problem, much less solve it. And so we need to recognize it. So much of what we face is ultimately and finally in God's control and not our own. Going to chapter 2, he comes to another conclusion, perhaps not any more surprising than the last. In this life, nothing lasts. And so picking up in chapter 2 and verse 1, he said, I said to myself, come now, I will test you with pleasure, so enjoy yourself. And behold, it too was futility. I said, of laughter it is madness, and of pleasure, what does it accomplish? I explored with my mind how to stimulate my body with wine, while my mind was guiding me wisely, and how to take hold of folly until I could see what good there is for the sons of men to do under heaven the few years of their lives. And so he starts out with amusement. And he says, I set out to amuse myself with every kind of pleasure. And while amusement is momentarily amusing, it will not fill us. And there are all kinds of people going through life trying to fill themselves with amusement. And not, you know, we all have our different amusements, and so long as it's okay within in and of itself, there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with being amused. But we cannot amuse ourselves into a full and satisfying life. That's never going to fill the hole that's in us. And Solomon recognizes that. He says it was futility. It was, at last, it was empty. It didn't get me anywhere. And so he moves from amusement to accomplishment. He says in verse 4, I enlarged my works. I built houses for myself. I planted vineyards for myself. I made gardens and parks for myself. I planted in them all kinds of fruit trees. I made ponds of water for myself from which to irrigate the forest of growing trees. And so he moved on from amusement to accomplishment. I'm going to build all these wonderful things. I'm going to do all these wonderful things. And he did it. He built it. He did it. He accomplished it. And we're going to find out here in just a bit, that didn't fill him either. And we're going to find out later on as we move forward in the text, we're going to find out why he was kind of, actually ends up being kind of bummed out about some of this stuff. Because it's going to end up in somebody else's hands and they're going to make a mess of it. And it'll be bad. But for now, he says, that didn't fill me. Amusement didn't fill me. Accomplishment didn't fill me. And then he moves on to acquisition. I bought male and female slaves, and I had homeborn slaves. Also, I possessed flocks and herds larger than all who preceded me in Jerusalem. Also, I collected for myself silver and gold, the treasure of kings and provinces. I provided for myself male and female singers and the pleasures of men, many concubines. I became great and increased more than all who preceded me in Jerusalem. My wisdom also stood by me. All that my eyes desired, I did not refuse them. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure, for my heart was pleased because of all my labor, and this was my reward for all my labor. And so he tried amusement, he tried accomplishment, and now he tries acquisition. He says, I piled up all this stuff, I got all this stuff, and it's great, it's good. But here's what he says. In verse 11, then I considered all my activities which my hands had done and the labor which I exerted, and behold, all was vanity and striving after the wind, and there was no profit under the sun. It didn't fill me. It didn't satisfy me at last. And so these things, the hunger for these things never ends. You amuse yourself in one way and then you want a little more. You build something and then you want to build a little bigger. You acquire something and you want to acquire a little more. And so it goes. It was all at last empty. And so those things, they don't stick around. So now he falls back on wisdom. Okay, maybe if I go back to wisdom, maybe I can find something there. Maybe I can make some kind of difference in the world. And so he says in verse 12, so I turn to consider wisdom, madness, and folly. For what will the man do who will come after the king except what has already been done? And so Solomon's the wisest guy there is. I'm gonna give this a good shot. Surely nobody could do more. And I saw that wisdom excels folly as light excels darkness. And so he says, you know, wisdom has really got some great things to recommend it. Because the wise man can look down the road and he can see that certain behaviors have good consequences and certain behaviors have bad consequences. And he knows a little bit about what's going to work and what's not going to work in this world. A little bit. Not with certainty, but you have some idea of what's got a good chance of being successful and what's got a good chance of failing. And so wisdom is better than foolishness. Because fools step into a lot of holes they don't have to step into, and the wise man can navigate around those things and do things that promote success. But then he says, the wise man's eyes are in his head, the fool walks in darkness, and yet I know that one faith befalls them both. Then I said to myself, as the fate of the fool, it will also befall me. Why then have I been extremely wise? So I said to myself, this too is vanity, for there is no lasting remembrance of the wise man as with the fool, inasmuch as in the coming days all will be forgotten, and how the wise man and the fool alike die. So I hated life, for the work which had been done under the sun was grievous to me, because everything is futility and striving after the wind. And so in this life, wisdom has a lot of advantages over folly. But when I got to thinking about it, I remembered two things that were kind of a bit of a downer. First of all, all my wisdom stacked up against the other guy's folly. And he can be as foolish as he wants to be. And you know what? We both land in the same plot of ground when it's all said and done. And we're both staring at the same side of it. It's not the green side. It's the other side. We both die. And not only that, but all the wisdom and all everything that I was able to bring to bear in my life, it'll all be forgotten. Which is hilarious if you think about it, because some people think there never was a Solomon. Which I think means they're proving him right, but they probably hadn't thought about that yet. So I'm going to be forgotten. Everything I've done is going to be forgotten. Under the sun, it doesn't seem to make any difference. Nothing lasts. And then in 18 through 23, he talks about some of his accomplishments, some of the things he built, some of the things he did. And he says, thus I hated all the fruit of my labor for which I had labored under the sun, for I must leave it to the man who will come after me. And who knows whether he will be a wise man or a fool, yet he will have control over all the fruit of my labor for which I've labored by acting wisely under the sun. This too is vanity. Now think about that, because one of the things that Solomon built was the largest Israelite empire ever to exist. And Rehoboam kept it going that way for, you know, like 2.5 hours or something. And then he got the really bright idea to raise taxes, and the whole thing fell apart, and it split, and now it's small, and yes. He took a 63 split-window Corvette and turned it into a Chevy Vega. Just like that. If you have no idea what I'm talking about, don't worry about it. He took something really good and made it really bad. He ruined everything his father had built. Now, some of that was on his father. I understand that. But it illustrates the point. He goes on to say, therefore, I completely despaired. In verse 20, I completely despaired of all the fruit of my labor for which I had labored under the sun, when there is a man who has labored with wisdom, knowledge, and skill, and he gives his legacy to one who has not labored with them. This too is vanity and a great evil. For what does a man get in all his labor and all his striving with which he labors under the sun? Because all his days his task is painful and grievous. Even at night his mind does not rest. This too is vanity. And so what another aspect of this is, he said, I did all this work and striving and losing sleep and working and building all this stuff, and I handed it over to some guy who didn't spend a minute working on it, and he's never going to appreciate it, and it's never going to mean anything to him because he didn't do what I did. And that happens too. Somebody builds something really great and they hand it off, because we don't really get a choice about that, and the person who gets hold of it, they might do anything with it. They might not appreciate it at all. They might not see any value in all this labor and effort and work, and they may just throw the whole thing away. So Solomon came to grips with the fact that all of his accomplishments, everything he built, none of it was going to last. None of it was going to last. It was going to go the way of all things. And then he says something really interesting. In verse 24, he said, "There is nothing better for a man than to eat and drink and tell himself that his labor is good. This also I have seen that it is from the hand of God. For who can eat and who can have enjoyment without him?" And so he says, you know what? Here's a thought. Do, build, accomplish, acquire, and enjoy it, and recognize that the enjoyment of it is a blessing from God. It's not the end all and be all of life. It's not going to fill you. But it is a blessing, and it is enjoyable. I was blowing down River Road yesterday, following a buddy of mine on his large white Harley, and looking at the floodwaters and the sunshine and the trees and the blue skies. And in that moment, life was very, very good. Wind blowing through my hair. Good stuff. Good stuff. Don't mock. Don't mock. I can tell by the look on your face you wish you were there. It was good stuff. It was enjoyable. It's just a moment. But it's a blessing. And one of many. One of many, many blessings. But that's not the end all and be all of life. It should be appreciated. It should be enjoyed. And it's not wrong to appreciate and enjoy the blessings of life so long as we recognize where they came from. That every good and every perfect gift comes down from the Father above. And he goes on to say in verse 26, "To a person who is good in his sight, he is given wisdom and knowledge and joy, while to the sinner he is given the task of gathering and collecting so that he may give to one who is good in God's sight. This too is vanity and striving after the wind." And so he says the other side of this is there's justice. Okay, a lot of the time there's justice, and the man who wants to do right and wants to do good is going to enjoy the fruits of that. And the wicked are going to pay. But then he does that vanity thing again. This too is vanity and striving after the wind. And you know, he's just kind of starting to pump you up, and you're feeling pretty good about the whole thing. And then he jerks the rug out from under you and says, "Oh yeah, vanity, vanity, it's all vanity." But there's something important there. Okay? He's not messing with us. It seems like it, I know, but he's really not. He's saying, look, when the blessings come, enjoy them as blessings from God. Know that God is for the good and he's against the wicked. But understand, you can't game the system. You can't say, I'm going to be good, so I'll get all this stuff. And is Benny Hinn in the house? I'm going to do good, so I'll get all this stuff and enjoy all these blessings. And if I serve God enough, my life will just be wonderful. There'll be one endless blessing. And he says, no, it doesn't really work that way. Trying to turn this into utilitarianism and just use this as a means to get what you want isn't going to work because the world's broken. Don't remember that what's crooked can't be straightened or numbered? Remember? Yeah, it's still broken. world is still broken. Enjoy the good stuff, but the world is still broken. Enjoy the sun, but the world is still broken. Enjoy the blessings. Do good, seek God, but the world is still broken. Don't forget, because if you do, you're going to fall into a different kind of hole. And so he's keeping us from doing the right things for the wrong reasons. Next, he reminds us in chapter 3 that God is in control. Let me just say on the front of this, the birds ruined this. I'm not talking about feathered creatures. I'm talking about the band. No, really? Nobody? Okay, David Brown is the only one. All right. Wow. This is a song. Turn, turn, turn. Anybody? No? Okay, yeah. Thank you, Bob. Wow. That song's older than I thought it was. It's just the three of us, I think. There is an appointed time for everything, and there is a time for every event under heaven. A time to give birth and a time to die. Time to plant and a time to uproot what is planted. A time to kill and a time to heal. A time to tear down and a time to build up. A time to weep and a time to laugh. A time to mourn and a time to dance. A time to throw stones and a time to gather stones. A time to embrace and a time to shun embracing. A time to search and a time to give up is lost. A time to keep and a time to throw away. A time to tear apart and a time to sew together. A time to be silent and a time to speak. A time to love and a time to hate. A time for war and a time for peace. What profit is there to the worker from that in which he toils? I've seen the task that God has given to the sons of men with which they occupy themselves. He has set everything, he has made everything appropriate in its time. He's also set eternity in their heart, yet so that man will not find out the work which God has done from the beginning even to the end. Now in the bird song, just for those of you who don't know that, the whole point of it was to have these different seasons of life where you should do this thing or that thing, and you know, you had to figure out what was appropriate for the... That's not his point. Yeah, they tweaked it just a little bit. They added like three or four words and ruined the whole thing. That's not his point. His point is that God, in his sovereignty, brings about different seasons and different times. And we don't have any choice about that. Okay? So, let's say, for instance, that you're just an honest German engineer. You want to build some cars, but the problem is it's 1943 and bombs are falling on your factory. That's a problem. It's going to hurt business. And it did, actually. It was hard on them. They didn't choose that. They didn't pick that time. They didn't say, hey, let's build cars in a war zone. That'll be fun. It came on them, and they had no choice in the matter. And so, we don't know what's coming next. It could be good, it could be bad. We don't choose the season in which we live, or the times in which we dwell. We have no control over those things. They come, and God does it in His wisdom, but we can't figure it out. We can't figure out why one time is a time of peace, and another time is a time of war. One time is a time of building, and another time is a time of tearing down. These seasons come, and they go. I imagine that my wife's grandmother did not think, boy, wouldn't it be fun to raise four boys on my own in the middle of the Depression. That would be cool. No, the Depression came on them, and they didn't get a vote. They didn't get to decide. I'm going to opt out of the Depression. I don't like the Great Depression. Let's go back to the 20s. A little more prosperous, you know. But no, they didn't get a choice. It was what it was. And it is what it is. And we can't figure out what's coming next. It might be one thing, it might be another. We try to. God has set eternity in our hearts, and we strive to figure it out, and we strive to understand why things are the way they are, and people make all kinds of predictions. But you know what? It's just too complicated. So we don't know what's coming. We don't understand why some things come. Sometimes we look back and we think we understand, but we don't know. God is in control, and He exercises that control in ways that are almost entirely mysterious to us. And so we need to recognize we're not in control. But then he comes back to this conclusion in verse 12. He says, I know that there's nothing better for them than to rejoice and do good in one's lifetime. Moreover, that every man who eats and drinks sees good in all his labor. It is the gift of God. I know that everything God does will remain forever. There is nothing to add to it. There's nothing to take from it. For God has so worked that men should fear Him. That which has been already and that which will be has already been, for God seeks what has passed by. And so things seem to move in cycles, and things change and they come back around, and God is in control of all that. We're not. But again, he says, okay, you're not in control. You can't manufacture the outcome you want in most circumstances. But if you do good, you serve God, and you get a good outcome, enjoy it. And don't wait to enjoy it, because the season of that blessing isn't going to last forever. So be thankful. Enjoy the blessing, enjoy the good times, enjoy the peace. Other times will come. And you are not the master of your own destiny. And it is very, very foolish to think that you are. Good times come and they go. Bad times come and they go. A dear friend used to say all the time in the midst of trouble, he'd say, just remember, it came to pass. Indeed, all that comes to pass, and it will in time pass. We will in time pass. It is the way of things. Again, it ought to humble us. We need to recognize we are not the masters of our own destiny. And then finally, and on a cheerier note, death is common to all. Picking up in verse 16, he says, furthermore, I've seen under the sun that in the place of justice there is wickedness, and in the place of righteousness there is wickedness. And so the first thing he recognizes is, you know what? There's injustice in the world. That's a real thing. And there's a lot of it. But in spite of the fact that there's injustice in the world and a lot of things in this life and this world don't turn out the way they should, he comes around and he says in 17, I said to myself, God will judge both the righteous man and the wicked, for a time for every matter and every deed is there. Now he's falling back on what he's already said. I know that God is one day going to make this right, but right now there's a lot of injustice. And The other complication to God's final justice is it's not so apparent in this world. So he says, I said to myself concerning the sons of men, God has surely tested them in order for them to see that they are but beasts. And so there's a, while he believes that there is a final judgment, he says that's not immediately evident. It's kind of a test for mankind to overcome this appearance that the end of a man and the end of a dog is not really any different. For the fate of the sons of men and the fate of beasts is the same. As one dies, so dies the other. Indeed, they all have the same breath, and there is no advantage for a man over a beast, for all is vanity. All go to the same place. All came from the dust. All return to the dust. Who knows that the breath of man ascends upward and the breath of the beast descends downward toward the earth? And so the spiritual outcome is not evident in this life. It looks like, from a physical standpoint, from an under-the-sun perspective, that everybody dies. The righteous and the wicked, man and beast, everybody dies. And so, once again, he says it, in view of the brevity of life, it would be foolish not to enjoy the good things that it does have to offer. Now, I don't think this is sort of an Epicurean bent in Solomon. He has told us to do good, and he has told us that there will be judgment. But he has also told us, in the face of the brevity of life, to enjoy the good things that life has to offer, to thank God for them, and to recognize that they are, however fleeting, they are great blessings indeed. But these conclusions are so important. It's important for us to understand that the world is broken because of sin. It is vital that we know that God is in control and we are not. And that we are frail and transient creatures that do not last. Because without this knowledge, we will constantly, constantly in our pride and our confidence, we will constantly be colliding with the hard realities of life in painful ways. And so, I understand that Ecclesiastes may be not the cheeriest book in the Bible, but these lessons will shore us up against the really hard times and help us hold on to God in the really confusing times. So I hope this has been encouraging to you, and I hope we'll continue to think about these things in the coming days as Greg leads us through this study. I think that will be beneficial to us as well as to those who may come to visit. If you're not a Christian, you know, a lot of times we say it's hard to be a child of God in such a worldly environment. And it is hard to be a child of God in a worldly environment. But you know what's much, much harder? What's much, much harder is trying to be a sinner in a universe run by God. Because you are constantly railing against and breaking yourself against the laws of the sovereign Creator. And it will not end well. And so we would encourage you to turn from that. Come to God through Jesus Christ. Turn away from the things that will surely destroy you. And embrace what you were intended for. The ways of God. If we can help you to obey the gospel now, come now as we stand and sing.